Welcome to my art studio where all the magic happens. This is the station for painting, and that is the station for all the resin art I do. If you want to check out my art, all you gotta do is go to lutfstudio.com. LUTFstudio.com. Good evening, and thank you so much for joining us today on Glazov Gang. I'm Annie Cyrus, sitting in for Dr. Jamie Glazov, which is always an honor, not only because he is my boss, my mentor, and my hero, but because I know you guys are one of the best audience we ever have had in our life. On that note, remember, it is that time of the year where I start the program, or Dr. Jamie Glazov starts with, this is a fan-generated show, and without your support, this is absolutely not possible. So please, if you can, and if you enjoy what we're doing here at Glazov Gang, make sure to go to jamieglazov.com, make a contribution. And if you can't, that's okay. Send that link to your friends who are able to make a contribution, and we will be always grateful for your support. I'm very excited. I have a first-timer on Glazov Gang guest with me, who is bringing us information that I feel like so many people are not aware of. So I'm not going to drag this on. I'm not going to let the whole waiting thing get you all on the edge of your seat, because I don't like doing that to you. With us this evening is David Summerall. He is a Christian carpenter, a small business owner, activist, and he's a citizen journalist, documentary filmmaker of Writing History and Bloody Hill. He's also the founder of A Stop Hate. David, thank you so very much for taking the time today to join me on Glazov Gang.
Thanks for having me and for not leaving us on that cliffhanger trying to introduce me. It's not that big a deal here. It's good to see you today.
Absolutely. I have so many questions for you, but before I do that, since this is your first time here on Glazov Gang or even Lindell TV and World View Weekend, why don't you take a few minutes and tell our audience who you are, your involvement with January 6th, and tell us a little bit about Stop Hate before we move forward with my questions.
That sounds great. So let me start at the beginning with Stop Hate. Started in 1992 during the infamous LA riots. I saw what the media did with a little piece of video and how they used it to divide the country and stoke the racial hatred back and forth. And my wife at the time was pregnant and with my son, and I thought, you know, we can't bring a kid into a world like this. We have to do something. So we started Stop Hate. It's also an acronym, Start Turning Off Prejudice, Heal Attitudes Through Education. And we've seen how the government and the media has politicized everything from, you know, sex, race, height, weight. It doesn't matter what it is. They're going to politicize it. Health issues. And use those to further divide the country. Used to stand against groups like the KKK back in the 90s. You know, been doing it a couple days as far as activism. And it's always been more of a glorified hobby of sorts. But, you know, it's turned into something more serious. Of course, the few years before January 6th, we did a lot of demand free speech rallies with friends and, you know, around the country as well, putting the exposure on the censorship from big tech and the, you know, the media, the government as well, and pleading for help, but never really getting the support we needed in the time that we needed. We see now that the censorship is playing such an important role. So before January 6th, I went to Austin to a rally and saw the Stop the Steal rally. Saw some friends there, decided to get involved and hosted, I don't know, seven different rallies, I guess, in Austin, which is Stop the Steal rallies. And Then I didn't want to go to DC. I was tired, and I was, you know, every Saturday you go down for 6 hours and you drive back and forth from Dallas. And, you know, I didn't want to go to DC, and everybody, you know, kind of reminded me how important it was for me to be there. We dealt with Antifa and BLM and a lot of different groups. So it was an opportunity to go and, you know, witness history, but document it more importantly. So I took a couple of friends, and we took off up there to film it and to document it. And that's what we did. We got to the gates before most people. The gates were still up. Let's put it that way. I was filming Ray Epps, you know, when we got to the circle there. And so we watched the whole debacle. We watched everything. We knew, and we were speaking actively in the crowd before it happened, that this is a setup. Y'all be careful, you know. And it looks like they are underprepared on purpose, and it turns out that was true. But fast forward just a couple months after that, by June of 21, we put out that first documentary, Writing History, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, Writing History, to make it right, to set the record straight. And it's called the Journalistic Battle of January 6th. And, you know, it's a verb, like Tamara Lee always says, it's a verb. And, you know, we're still writing history. It's still a process. It's still the media battle. And, you know, people see that movie as 37 minutes of just a timeline from the public video from the day that shows a totally different story than anybody's heard. It has most of the information that people are finally talking about today in regard to the deaths. Roseanne Boyland, Ashley Babbitt, of course, Kevin Greeson, and Benjamin Phillips, and the true story behind Officer Brian Sicknick has you know, been a result of our investigations as well. We found the witnesses that took Officer Sicknick to the police at 3 o'clock and asked to get him medical help. And the next witness, a combat medic at 7:30, that asked to treat him and saw that he was having a stroke, and they denied him the ability to help render aid. And then at 10 o'clock, when the medics got there, they didn't know why he had collapsed. So three witnesses never say anything about a head wound. And yet 24 hours later, they had this big story that immediately turned the public away from any support toward J6ers, because they believed that we could have hurt or killed a policeman. So it's interesting the way it all falls together. And there's so many angles and directions we could take this, but I think the most important thing is that, you know, I'm actively working with the lawyers and with the defendants that we can, in as many cases as possible, to, you know, give them the information. I'm licensed by the DOJ to be in the database for some of these cases for these attorneys, and they've hired me as a video investigator. In the beginning, when these lawyers were looking for their information, you know, they would find everything kind of led to Stop Hate. We were putting, you know, everything on stophate.com that we could find, and, you know, breaking stories nobody knew about. And so they said, you know, will you come to work with us? And so it gives me access to that mysterious thousands of hours of government footage. And, you know, it gives you a different perspective of the day, for one, but, you know, trying to keep my team in play, basically, and able to support these defendants is so critical, and you know, it's necessary. These guys don't have that kind of support from anybody else, and it's I don't know how to express it's not a thankless job. It just doesn't pay very well, and I still have to pay, you know, a team to do all these things, and it's difficult at times. And, you know, that's where we ask for support to help us, you know, literally help these people fight their legal battles with critical video evidence that nobody else has had access to, or known how to get around in the system, or been able to find that needle in the haystack. We have, you know, documented hours and hours and hours and hours of investigation, and, you know, the storyline. We've proven so many things about January 6th that still have yet to come to light, because until they make it into a trial, they're not public. So everything that we get into these trials that we can, you know, that's where everyone's seeing these new videos and everything that we're getting into evidence, or that the court's using, and then it's made public, and you're able to see the brutality, you know. But I think it's interesting the courts have stayed away from the murder scenes, the people that were involved in proximity to, say, Roseanne Boylan. You know, those cases are pushed back because they don't want to address the deaths that they caused, you know, the police, literally, until they get more points on the board to say these were all, you know, 500 criminals already said that they were guilty and we might have made a mistake about the death, but, you know, and on the second hand, people are blaming the Capitol Police for all the mayhem, saying they were underprepared and understaffed and under-equipped. But it's really the Metro Police that were given charge of the day and that were brought in as the bully, the strong arm, and did, you know, the lion's share of the brutality toward the citizens that really instigated. You know, they attacked these people for over an hour. The police attacked the people for over an hour before it was declared a riot. And it's only because the police wouldn't stop attacking. It's literally on video. So you'll be able to, I hope one day soon, see all these things.
Well, thank you for that explanation. Let me start here because it has always been my curiosity. Now, I'm an associate producer with Lindell TV and WBW, meaning I work with video literally all day long. And with almost 12 years of experience doing post-production, I'm very aware of the power of manipulation in edit when it comes to video. So are you. So let's go over this. You were there. This is January 6, 2021. You're there with your film crew and you're literally with every step of the day, you're going forward. How much of what the public have seen from either side, either somebody with their cell phone, from government, anyone, how much of this is cut in the wrong timeline or cut in the wrong angle to manipulate the truth of what exactly happened on January 6, 2021?
A lot of it is, and that's the manipulation. It doesn't necessarily have to be CGI or made up or faked or anything. It's just where you cut it, where you splice it. If you don't show before, then how do you know what led up to it? A prime example, if a guy's standing there with his arm up and a shield is against his arm and the pictures from the police say he was hitting that shield, but then the video shows that the guy threw his arm up to block the shield that was coming at him. So whether it's still photography against video or the Proud Boys, like when they were marching to the Capitol, the committee used that one video where he said, you know, don't make us stand against you or something like that. Well, they cut out the beginning of the video. We published it that said, hey, we're on the same team here. You know, we're on the same team here. We don't want anything. You know, don't make us stand. You know, it was like a totally different conversation if you got the whole thing. And of course, Trentus Evans' case, the committee as well moved his timestamps by 2 hours, I believe, to make it seem like it was the beginning of something when it was really closer to the end. So, yeah, the manipulation's real. People haven't seen, you know, for instance, the real story about Roseanne Boylan. They're seeing a lot more of it than they ever have. But until you see the videos for yourself and see her kicking her feet, trying to help herself, save herself, and hear her screaming while the men around her are saying, stop, please stop, you're killing her, please stop, stop. I mean, screaming. It's just a horrible thing. But, you know, those are the pieces of history that we can't be denied because, you know, unfortunately, it's like the government says, we can never let this happen again. And the fact is, people don't know what happened because of those edits and because of the way, say, HBO. And I've got a great question for you as a producer and director. How did HBO get that Officer Fanon footage and know that that was the magic footage they needed for a movie? Did they get to look at all the Capitol footage and pick what they wanted? Or were they given one video and said, make it work? Or were they given three videos? And either way you look at it, it's more evidence than some of the attorneys were getting for their clients. They didn't have access to all the video or the body cam for all these things. So it's a really interesting way to dissect and wonder, how did they get this video? How did they get the specific video? Why did Fanon turn into this rock star superhero with a book and a big fundraiser? And they took him to the Super Bowl. They celebrated Fanon they celebrated Lala Morris at the Super Bowl, and she's the one, the MPD officer, that beat Roseanne Boylan's body with a stick in the West Tunnel. And that's the new controversy. You know, nobody knew. They said all the violence was objectively reasonable. Even the shooting assassination of Ashley Babbitt by Leroy Byrd. So the investigations don't stop on our end because we're using it all in court. People aren't aware of the access that we have to the database because the mainstream media doesn't want people to know that we can already see these things and talk about them. We can't reproduce them or show them. You know how that works, but we can definitely talk about what we're seeing. It's just interesting that the people on top that complain that they can't see it don't want to talk to people that can. And once again, that propaganda machine and that slow drip of information has cost us literally years. So, example, the Roseanne Boylan story a couple of weeks ago made mainstream news in a bigger way. And people are like, who killed Roseanne Boylan? Who's badge number five, whatever? We broke that story 20 months ago, but it hasn't been timed by the mainstream media, so they haven't ever put any light on it. There's a five-death article on StopHate.com that talks about the details of each death with witnesses, with videos, and people don't know it exists. It's at StopHate.com, another very well-kept secret. So we're trying to get a little more light on the truth and a little more support for our people and for the work that we're doing for them. So it's an interesting time to be alive against the media, which is trying to push the one narrative, and against the government, which is supporting it and not doing anything about it. And then the people who get blamed that they don't want this evidence to come to light, when actually they want it all. If they broke a piece of glass, they need to pay for the glass. They get that. If they did something bad, they're willing to suffer those consequences. But the truth is, when you see the level of brutality from the police to the people and what the people were witnessing, then it justifies. You know, I listened to a really great story earlier, and I know a lot of people have seen it, had a lot of likes and views, but this lady talks about going to class, and this really nice teacher told them to sit in a circle, and if you move or if you say anything, you're going to fail my class. And he made them all sit down, and he went over and took a goldfish out of a bowl and set it on the table and walked out of the room. And all these people are, you know, the kids are freaking out. They're crying. Oh, my God. Well, you can't say anything, can't move. So they're just watching this fish die. And finally, like, it seemed an eternity. The girl said, like, two and a half minutes or something, probably. One of the girls gets up and grabs it and says, you know, F this, and grabs the fish and puts it back in the water. And the teacher walked back in and said, you've all failed. You know, look at this test. I mean, look what happened. That's the right thing to do, to save the fish, put it in the water, right? But so it's a class. Fail me. You know, we're going through that with J6.
Yeah, I believe the teacher comes in and says, look what the world has done to you. You have betrayed yourself. And for what? A passing grade?
That's it. And look at us at J6. It's the same thing. We're betraying our people, the original election auditors, because we believe a lie that they hurt a policeman. Listen, people have been arrested, and they've said, y'all's people killed one of our people with a fire extinguisher. That is a blatant lie. And yet the police are still putting good citizens in harm's way, potentially be killed. If you've hurt a cop or killed a cop or anything, you know they're not going to be nice to you walking down the stairs handcuffed. I mean, this is the way it is. So when you say that to people and send them out in the street, these cops aren't doing the research. They're serving the warrant. That's a lot different. So they don't know the backstory. They just get what they're told. And if they're told these people could be killers that killed one of ours, oh my gosh, man, you know, that's why they're shoving these guys around and holding women and children at gunpoint and throwing flashbang grenades where the dog sleeps and between the houses to stir up the neighbors, and putting the big trucks, sinking them in the dirt and the grass, coming up in the front yard with the ram ready to push the windows out and the doors open. And yeah, it's a shock and awe campaign. You're not supposed to do that against citizens in the first place. And then you kidnap them and you take them to a foreign land, to Washington, D.C., a district. It's not even a state. It's not even home territory for us. And you're held hostage, literally. They call them prisoners of war, like in the flag back there. But they're really hostages because they don't have the rights that prisoners have. They didn't get a shave or a haircut or their fingernails or toenails trimmed for over a year because they wouldn't take the jab. They've never had religious services or visitation or even video visitation due to COVID for over 2 years. They just recently, because one of the congressmen made a big stink, started getting a little bit of visitation rights, which they gladly take away for any infraction that they consider worthy of putting them back into the isolation. But these people, according to the Geneva Convention, have been mistreated. They've been held in isolation way, way longer than the convention itself even deems humane. So it's an amazing story, and I just believe that people are unaware of what these people have been going through and the efforts that me and my team have taken to really support them and help get the word out. And it's not about a credit thing, it's about a truth thing. And there's a lot of it at stophate.com. I hope people will just go look through the J6 research, go look at the calls to action, because there's, you know, 15, 20 things people can do. Everybody has a different gift or a talent. And, you know, of course, support our team as well, you know, because we're the ones that are putting the hours in for these folks. And like I said, it's not a public thing. It's not a thankless job. The people appreciate it, but the public's never going to, you know, really know to support what we're doing if I don't tell people what I do. So I'm trying to kind of shift that over. We've asked for help for these prisoners for 2 years. We pushed this American Gulag Chronicles book, Letters from Prison. You can get that. There's a link at stophate.com. Just scroll down and see the book picture and click on that and buy an extra one for your library, you know. But all the proceeds from that book go to help the prisoners. The board is completely volunteer-based. Nobody takes a penny for anything. And so all that money goes, but it's getting their stories out to the public from their hand, you know, their artwork, their expressions of pain and patriotism. It's an amazing mix, but, you know, I suggest people go grab them. They're $45 each, but, you know, anything to spread the word and to really sew this back into the fabric of our country where the media and big tech are trying to eliminate it and erase it. It's a real struggle, and, you know, we could use all the help we can get.
Absolutely. I'm going to take a one long minute here, and I'm just going to draw a parallel. I come from Islamic Republic of Iran. Most of our audience are aware of this. And I want to start here. In 1979, when the revolution was completed, which was basically hijacked by Khomeini, what Khomeini did was, okay, we're going to get rid of this constitution, bring in a new constitution that is going to be 100% Sharia. They did that. And one of the first things that came up is women will have to wear a mandatory hijab. You're going to cover head to toe, no makeup, no nail polish, nothing. Head to toe, face is allowed, hand is allowed, as long as there's no makeup. Some of the women decided to say, oh, no, this isn't happening. We're not going to wear the hijab. We're not going to remove our makeup. We're not going to lose that freedom. The morality police of Iran decided, based on approval by the president and Khomeini supreme leader, they're like, okay, if you don't, there will be punishment. What was the punishment? For example, if your hijab wasn't fully covering your head or it was like in the middle of your head, they would pull your hijab and pin it to your forehead with a pin. They would pin it to your forehead. If you had makeup on, they would remove it with a cloth that had acid on it. If your pants wasn't long enough or if your legs were showing, they would shove your leg into a bag of live cockroaches. Things like that was the punishment. And before you know it, as you're all aware, for 44 years, Islamic Republic of Iran has all women wearing full hijab, right? Why am I drawing this parallel? But the story of the biologist teacher, what I just told our audience and what you're telling us about what's happening with, you know, lack of support, knowledge, information, all of this comes to one aspect, and that is human nature. Fear is one of the most powerful tools of dictatorship. You look at any country that is suffering under Islamization, under communism, socialism, they all have one thing in common, and that is the government enforced fear. And humans bowed to that fear and gave up their courage. Because to me, courage is when you are afraid, but you don't stop. This is what we've been facing since January 6, 2021 to today. Harassment, anyone who's worried about FBI knocking at their door, they're worried about getting arrested. But we're not looking at the fact that people lost their lives. People lost their loved ones. There are many J6 hostages, better than prisoner to me, who have lost years, careers, financially, life, houses, cars, families. How dare do we Americans sit by and not do the right thing? Again, as David, you said, if they did something wrong, so be it. Let them face consequences and the penalties set by law. But many of them haven't done anything wrong. Many of them haven't even had their trial. What happened to a speedy trial in America? I may not be a lawyer. I may not be an expert. I'm pretty sure I know all the laws that apply to when you do or do not commit a crime. By the way, what happened to not guilty until found guilty? So I went on this long rant because I am very upset with my fellow Americans who are not touching many topics out of fear because they want to. How many Americans gave into the mask and the double mask and the vaccine and the double vaccine and the 7 boosters because they didn't want to lose their paycheck? I repeatedly say this, especially my fellow Christians. God provides. Stop bowing to tyranny because you don't want to lose your fancy house or fancy car or even a roof over your head. Because one day you have to answer. Okay, I'll stop the rant. I'll ask the question after saying all of this. I'm sure you can notice I get a little too passionate because I don't want to lose America. The freedoms offered in America are too precious. They are God-given. With all that rant and points, here's my question for you. You said your clients, you have cases like I'm familiar with Derek Evans and, you know, Jake Lang and a few others. But generally, as a whole picture, can you give me and our audience of the numbers, the state of where they are as far as trial, guilty, not guilty, you know, the offers of lawyers? I want to have an idea of what is their condition. Your clients that you're aware of, what is their condition?
Not every client is in jail, but there are close to 100 people that are in prison, pre-trial detainment. So I want people to understand they've not been convicted of a crime. They're being accused. They should still be considered innocent until proven guilty, but they have been held in torturous conditions for over 2 years, many of these guys now, before their trials. Jake Lang, you mentioned, his trial is not set until 24. So he's the Roseanne proximity defendant. So they're not going to get to his trial for a while longer. They have to get more points. But these guys are, you know, as bad as prison is, and it's supposed to be because it's prison, these guys shouldn't be there in the first place. But these guards treat them horribly, like they are white supremacist neo-Nazis, and they're not. These are just patriotic. A lot of them are ex-military, ex-law enforcement, carpenters, plumbers, just regular people and good people. And that's the people inside the jail. You know, now there have been over almost 1,000 people charged so far, and they want over 2,000. They say between 2,000 and 3,000 total. I don't know where they want this to stop. It's more flesh, you know, for their gain. And that's the sad part. These families, it's not just the prisoners that are affected. It's the people that we don't even know about that we try to reach out to minister to and say, hey, come be a part of the support group, you know, or know that there's a phone number that's 833-SAVED-J6. If you need to talk to somebody and vent a little bit about what's going on, there's a safe place for you to do that. But counselors, we've never had access until we did it ourselves. You know, the priests, the counselors, the chaplains and such. And you know, the lawyer situation, if you have a public defender, good luck. You're not going to, you know, do very well with that. We haven't seen a lot of a positive action from those guys. It's like they're negotiating pleas for these people. And you know, the government has everyone where they want them. You know, they're dragging them out to deep water. It's been, you know, a long time. They're tired. They're broke. They're just normal people. So they didn't come from, you know, money per se. So this is very draining. But it's not only the prisoners. It's their families. It's their kids. You know, the other ones that got drug out of the house, you know, with little red dots on them, or made to sit outside at 5 a.m. in the cold on the curb with no blanket, the little children, you know, that are scared and traumatized, that, you know, after 2 years are asking, can you get a picture out of daddy so I can remember what he looks like again? I mean, it's been that long. Some of these children were born after these people left and they've never seen them. I mean, this is literally what our government is doing to peaceful protesters. And I don't think the public really understands, but let me just hit on these couple points real quick. Courage is one of the things we talk about, you know, and I think that's what it really takes. These J6ers did not sign up to be in the position they're in. They didn't go to overthrow their government. They didn't go to fight anybody because they didn't take any weapons. They took flags and megaphones and, you know, that's it. I mean, so we know the truth, but the courage that these people have to be able to stand here still and go through what they're going through at our expense, because they could take a plea, they could go home, they could, you know, denounce Trump and, you know, blame him for everything and probably get, you know, a bonus or something on the way. I don't know, but they're not folding. And that's what the government kind of hoped for, was that they could, you know, just get their pound of flesh like they want and send these people home. But it's the active people that went in the first place. And when that fight or flight thing happens, they're not going to take off. When they see, you know, people being abused and attacked by these police for no reason, you know, there's police radio dispatch of one of the ladies on the dispatch saying, grenade to the face, you know, missing teeth. Or one lady, lacerations to a female's head, lacerations to her arm, bleeding controlled. You know, who goes to a rally for that? I mean, this is a lady. They've got the bleeding controlled. She went to protest and got beat up by the police. You see Victoria White in the tunnel, you know, getting senselessly beat, just beaten and beaten. You see her body just swaying. The cops have her. She's out of control. She's unconscious, for lack of a better way to put it, and she's just gone. And they're just beating her in the head with that baton. Now, imagine seeing in the footage that type scenario 1,000 times across the front lines, across the tunnel scene, you know, in this inside when people are walking by, different things that the public needs to be aware of, the level and why these people are suffering and why it's such a great injustice to be blamed. And I think Coy Griffin said it best when he said, you don't know what it's like to sit in jail for something you know you're not guilty of, and to be punished and to be in that circumstance, in that prison, in that solitary confinement, you know, for such a long period of time. I think he was in for 3 weeks. I think he went 9 days without coming out of the hole and without a shower or anything, just in a stretch. And, you know, these other guys have been in there for 2 years. It's just unthinkable. And so almost 100 guys in prison. There's a great map that shows where they all are. And you can go to stophate.com to the calls to action. You can find all these links. One of them is the Patriot Mail Project. If you can write a letter and afford a stamp, please get on the list to start writing these guys. PatriotMailProject.com is awesome. They've done fantastic work for these guys to be in communication with the outside world. They helped tremendously with the book, The American Gulag Chronicles, with Tim Rivers. And he's with J6PatriotNews.com. He's a great guy, has really stepped up to put it all in. But the point being, the J6ers and these people that are rallying around them are all like the founding fathers material. They're cut from the same cloth. They didn't sign up for this, but they're so brave and they'll never surrender. That courage is evident, but they're fighting the biggest fight of their lives. And we're treating them like the Vietnam vets, you know, like they did something horrible and we're supposed to, because we believe they might've hurt a policeman. They might've beaten on the police and shouldn't have done that. When I can guarantee you, 9 times out of 10, at least, the people that did anything to police were probably defending someone else, whether it be a woman or a child or an elderly person, that were all mixed within the crowd. You see it in all the videos. But, you know, the other thing is that speedy trial that you talked about. Most of these guys were convinced that it was in their best interest to sign off on their rights to a speedy trial so that the government didn't punish them and just throw them in jail forever, because this could be seditious conspiracy. So it's in your best interest to just sign off on that. And we're going to work with the government and make sure that we get all the evidence. And really, it just allowed the government to torture them and to kick the can down the road, because the government's never been ready for a case. You know, and all you would hear when they'd have their hearings is, We need more discovery. Let's kick the can down the road 60 more days. We need more discovery another 90 days. We need more discovery. And these guys went on and on and on. Still no family, still no hope, still no relief, still not a drop of water from the system. So, you know, when you look at that and you compare that to even the Iran hostage crisis, you know, that's where this whole yellow ribbon campaign, we wrote an article back in November of 21, and the comparison is there, except in America we have twice as many hostages being held by our own government, whether it's in prison or at home in pretrial detainment where you can't leave your house or your room. It's been horrible for some of these people. We have more than we had in Iran, and you know, everyone was so upset about that. Where are they now when they learn the truth about all these deaths? I believe that it's going to change, you know, the public opinion. I really hope it does, because people need to be properly outraged at what happened. I just don't know that a big dump of all the information is what's best for them. I think, unfortunately, at this point, well, they probably need to be, you know, spoon-fed to an extent, given the truth, but not all the gory truth and the details in the video, because I do believe when they see my collection, they're going to go crazy, and you know, the people may bring back tar and feathers or running people out on a rail or whatever they used to do back in the day. But, you know, whatever happens, happens. These people that committed the crimes, there's consequences to those crimes. There's legal remedies for them. I didn't make any of those words or penalties up. So, you know, don't look at me if you get your foot caught in the treason trap or something. I just know that the deprivation of constitutional rights for these men, the Brady violations, you know, not having evidence, not having exculpatory evidence. The FBI has known from the beginning, of course, that these deaths were not natural causes. We were told Benjamin Phillips and Kevin Greeson both died of natural causes, heart disease, heart attack and a stroke, heart disease. That's not the truth. Kevin Greeson, concussion grenade. Can you say that's a lot different than, you know, when you look at cause and effect or manner of death and cause of death? There's some importance in how that happened and why. And then, of course, Roseanne Boylan's death is blatant. So I think the question is, if you can see Roseanne Boylan getting clubbed after she got gassed and after she got trampled in the West Tunnel, can you say that looks like a drug overdose? Because if that doesn't look like a drug overdose, you should report it as something other than a drug overdose. If you're an official and you're in a position of power, so I've put it out to a lot of people, and I'm still, you know, expecting somebody to report it.
Agreed. And thank you for that information. We're going to take a 1 minute sponsor break and be back to continue the discussion. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, and thank you so much for staying with us until now. We are joined by David Summerall discussing lots of important topics about January 6th. Before taking the sponsor break, David, as you were explaining, you mentioned something of, you know, we're treating our January 6th patriots who are now in prison as, you know, Vietnam soldiers, like they did something wrong. I want to do a quick level of hypocrisy in America. Are you familiar with Officer Mohammed Noor?
I don't think so.
So Mohammed Noor, officer, was a Minnesota police officer with his partner. They got a call, disturbance. They go to the location. An Australian woman, hands up, absolutely up, in a nightgown, runs outside to say whatever she's about to say. Mohammed Nu draw his weapon from within the car, shoots the woman dead. He gets, you know, charged with murder, convicted of murder. And last year, Minnesota Supreme Court decided, you know, it would be very Islamophobic if we convicted a Muslim officer. So you're free. He's on the streets now, free. Didn't get his shield back, but he's a free man. What do you think of that level of hypocrisy in America?
Yeah, it makes me think that every J6er just needs to say they're Muslim real quick. And, you know,
bingo!
I identify as Muslim. How can you do this to me, you racist bigots? You know, let me free now. You know, let me out. I need to be free. And I'm telling you, there's a big racket going on. And like I said, the propaganda machines, the infiltration of all these groups, the real radical elements in which you're speaking of right now. I mean, these are the things that we need to be acutely aware of, but we're too entertained. You know, as long as we've got, you know, stuff to do on the weekend and restaurants to eat in and sports to watch. And, you know, we know all the statistics on all the players and what their batting averages, how many touchdowns and, you know, how many Super Bowls they've been, but we don't know how many prisoners.
Oh, it gets worse. How many wives they have had? What's the status of the current girlfriend? How many baby mamas they have? It gets there.
It's like the Kardashians. I always blame the Kardashians. You know, everybody's always just, but you know, the truth of the matter, and I always say as well, until your kid gets hit by a drunk, you're probably not going to get involved with Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. You know, until something happens to you in that group, you're probably not going to get involved in that group. This is one of those proactive things that once you're a member, it's too late. When the FBI comes and knocks your door off the hinges and drags your family out and throws flashbangs and puts you at gunpoint, you're going to jail and you're not going to get out until they want you to, which is going to be a very long time until they get what they want. And that's the political points. That's the shock and awe that they've talked about the entire time. And it's that shift of blame and putting it on every single person except the people that did the things, you know, and that's the higher ups and it's the government, it's the media. And, you know, until the people stand up and say, hey, enough's enough, let our people free for once. You can ask all day long to free the video. And hey, if they do, good. If not, that's okay. I really don't think that there's that much on that video that we don't have. You know, the public, there were a million people there. They had cell phones in every nook and cranny of the Capitol. You know, a lot of people that weren't scared in the beginning, we put out tips at stophate.com and people could send all these videos, still can, and we still receive things. A lot of support things now, but we still get information from there as well. People want to tell their stories. They're just intimidated that if they stick their head out for a minute, the FBI is going to knock it off and they're going to end up in jail. We've had people go to testify in court for these defendants. Say a defendant gets charged with going inside the Capitol, but they have a friend that was there that didn't go inside and that was never charged with anything. And so the defendant's friend shows up to testify and they say, sidebar, we need to get this guy an attorney and let him know that, you know, even though he hasn't been charged yet, if he testifies here that he was on the grounds, we may turn around and file charges on him. And they're trying to intimidate people. I've got one friend right now, a J6 girl, that was looking at two misdemeanors, and they told her to take a plea. And she said, I'm not going to take a plea. I didn't do anything wrong. That's not right. And they said, well, if you're not going to take the two misdemeanors, we're going to give you six felonies. Now, this is the way that a lot of our communities in America have been treated in other situations in other parts of town for a long time, and we didn't do anything about it. It's our turn now. And I think it's that great carryover, crossover moment for both sides to be able to say, hey, let's put an end to this, because they do it to all of us. It's all about power and control and calling us all the bad guys, getting us in their system. And they want to take our rights, our freedom to travel, our freedom to make money or to trade or use electronics, or to buy a property, or to work, or to vote or to own a gun. I mean, I ask people all the time, when do we get our own water fountains for J6? Because this is civil rights in reverse. We've lost everything. It's the social terrorism. And I swear, J6 is the biggest thing of our lifetime, and people are sleeping through it and wondering who's going to be in the next big thing, you know? And literally, we've just voted for people that are all complicit with the deaths of innocent Americans and are aware that there were deaths that aren't as what they were stated, and yet they do nothing. So we really don't have representation. I think we can take away that taxation part now. What do you think?
Agreed. And I'm just going to give two examples or numbers for the fact of, you know, you don't get involved until it happens to you. As of this very moment, as we're speaking, Islamic Republic of Iran is holding 265 and some thousand political prisoners in Iran. That makes it one in every 300 of the population. How's that for still not getting involved? Now, 7 years ago, I heard a speech by Hossein Obama as I was walking to work back then. I grabbed my phone. I did a 2.5 minute video and then went to work. And that's how I actually became the internet sensation. And what I said was, Hossein Obama just gave a speech at a mosque, I believe in Boston. And he said, let me be clear. Islam is part of America. And I want to be clear. Islam cannot be part of anything. Now, this is not necessarily related to J6. But my point is, since that day to today, I've been saying, do not think it's not going to happen here. The new administration, starting with Hussein Obama, is copying the red-green axis. Red being communist or Marxist, green being Islamist. They are taking that very guidelines and applying it to this country. People kept telling me, hey, sweetheart, just because you had a couple of bad experiences with your dad doesn't mean you need to be paranoid. Well, what do you say now? We have more than 100 political prisoners in the United States of America. Where is the only country that within the Constitution, under the First Amendment, we have the right to petition our government. Oh, and by the way, the entire government system is by the people. For the people. Help me out here, David. I butchered that whole government system.
You're good, though. Hey, it's for the people, by the people, and you know we've changed that up a little bit and adopted it as well. You know, we the people sounds good, looks all scrolly and fancy. We the people, but yes. Literally, we're the ones that have to be the people. These J6ers have been forced into it and then accepted that role to be the people. But if we're going to free the people, that's what this, and I know that sounds really cliche, but it's so oversimplified that that's where we are. We have to free the people, and the people are the ones with the jab, whichever jab it is, whichever issue it is, whatever freedom has been lost. You know, the best things in life are freedom, you know, and that's,
but that's exactly where the problem starts. We the people, for the people, by the people. You're right. We don't have representation because as bosses, we have failed to run the business. And we sat back.
Yeah. The game's been played all around us, too. I mean, look, if you wanted to be in politics and everyone in town thought you were the best person for the job, it's still up to whichever party you want to run into as to whether they're going to give you permission to be even on the ballot and have a chance and jump over the hurdles and get your name out there or support you, or you'll get right up to that point and you'll have just what you need. Just a little bump would do it. And they say, no, we're going to put our money in this other candidate that we know is going to fail, but we're going to try to make a point. And there's five other candidates over here that if they had just a little bit of help, we could at least gotten more seats wherever we are and put more points on the board. But they do that on purpose. And it's all that control thing. Listen, there's nobody in the Congress or in the Senate that sounds like me, acts like me, thinks like me. That's what a representative is supposed to do. And then they're just not doing it. And I can't believe that they are, because our people aren't free. You know, and that's what I was talking about earlier. You can ask to see the video all day long, but free the people. Yeah, free the 14,000 hours at your leisure. You can watch it, you know, on the weekends with your Netflix and chill. But we need those people out there being tormented. They're being tortured. They're still committing suicide. And it's not the guys that are inside the jail. that know there's a support group. It's the people outside that might be watching this that are still scared because nobody's banged on their door yet, but they know they're coming, or they think they're coming. And every single day for the last 2 years, they've woken up every morning and made it past 6 a.m. and said, well, I guess I get another day. Until they started getting people at noon, and then it's two times a day you have to be looking over your shoulder wondering if they're coming. People live like this. People that have been visited by them that haven't been arrested. I had a guy on my show just a couple months after January 6th, and he said, they came to my house. They went through everything. They said, next time they come back, they're going to take me to jail. And probably 6-7 months later, they finally came back and took him to jail. And he didn't do anything. He's not a bad guy. I mean, these people are not any different than any of us. And that's what's the travesty. I mean, they weren't activists. They weren't, you know, scholars. They weren't politicians. They weren't anything but normal people that got duped and tricked into standing in the wrong place, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And now they're being used as scapegoats. And so I can't understand, you know, the people that do know what's going on are quick to support. They jump in feet first. I really think it's just a matter of really explaining to people, you know, on a bigger level, on a bigger platform, on places just like this and Lindell TV and everything, to say, this is what really happened. And this was not a drug overdose. These were not natural causes. People made these things happen, and they weren't protesters. They were police. And we're not trying to say the police are bad, but the people that did that need to be held accountable. And that tells a whole different story. When you look at this as who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? Well, who didn't kill anybody that day? The protesters didn't kill one single person, not one, not a policeman, not 10 policemen, not 100, not anybody. But then you take the police over here on the other hand, they killed 4 people that day. Their actions led to the death. And I'm not calling it murder one or what, because that's up for a judge and a court and a jury, whoever, Supreme, I don't know. But somebody to judge, to you can't say that all that violence was deemed objectively reasonable once you've seen it. You'll be appalled to know that they bought 2 years just by saying that, and that everybody said, well, it's all been deemed, you know, objectively reasonable, so I guess it's okay. It's not okay. It's not okay. When you're shooting a grenade launcher at a guy's face and knocking his teeth out, that's not okay. When you're pushing a crowd onto a lady, you CS gas her till she can't breathe. She winds up on the bottom. You shove people over her where she's getting her face stepped on. And then you beat the rest of the life out of her with a stick. That's not objectively reasonable. And I do believe that the more people that see this and understand will understand the importance of what we've done in looking through this video. I mean, that's how we found everything. We found the video, the witnesses. We go out and find these things. God has been very good to us in our investigations and our discovery for these things that, you know, I don't know who else was really looking into all the deaths and all the murders, but that 5-death article on StopHate.com, we put it out January a year ago when I finally found Benjamin Phillips. They said he never was a part of the deal, but he's there in the front, in the very beginning, and you can see him plain as day on camera when he collapses and hits the pavement and the other people go to try to get him help. And you know, it's a horrible scene, but it's been shielded away from the public. The media curtain, you know how this works. If they don't want you to see it, you're not going to see it.
I would somewhat agree with your statement, but then I would also say this. By the way, I'm absolutely one of those people who will not shy away from blaming people. Because I really think at the end of the day, where we're at, we all failed. We the people mm-hmm. failed. But I'm going to say this. Okay, mainstream media may not want you to see it. That's very accurate. But then there are plenty of truth-telling smaller platforms out there on Twitter, Facebook, Truth Social, Getter, YouTube, Rumble, Brighteon, you name it. However, because comfort zone is to sit back, grab the beer, open the pizza, flip the channel, who's going to go find these channels? We're That's all right. going to have to wait for someone. You know how many times people are like, oh, you did an interview with this and that person. Can you send me a link? I'm like, can you just go to my website and find it? Oh, I'm really busy. Really? Like finding the most recent video link on top of homepage of my website is too much work to do. It's See, hard. That's the problem. Our side. Now, this is going to upset some people. And again, one of my main job out here is to, you know, offend people. And that's just because First Amendment gives me that right. So what can I say? I love practicing my God-given rights. Yeah. It's the fact that in 2020, Summer of Love, leftists burn down cities, buildings, kill people. And every single one of them got away with it. You know why? Because they were united, because they were not lazy, and because they were leftists.
Yeah, they were deemed mostly peaceful, remember? It was Bingo. Mostly peaceful. Yeah, Bingo. That's what they said about that, and that's the crime. And people know that. People aren't dumb. But at that
point, people didn't learn from it. When January 6th happened, what did we do? And by the way, I am not promoting violence whatsoever. No. Violence. No. I am saying the unity, the reason left has won so far. And it's okay if you're screaming at your monitor. It's all right. Call me what you need to. If that helps you calm down. But listen to what I'm saying. Left has gone so far with their goal because they are united. They don't sit there dissecting each other's options and opinions. The little things that don't matter never comes into discussion. The amount of time the right or conservative people spend on digging dirt on each other, exposing each other, and smearing each other is the time left is spending to come after us.
Hey, let me tell you, I think you're 100% spot on. And would you also agree that the left is also better funded? So sometimes they look at the money and they don't care. As long as they're getting paid, they can get along with anybody for a little while, and they just keep doing their work. And we're scraping and scrimping and trying to, you know, just make it to the next month and get more points on the board. And then the infighting and the grifters and the people that are taking money from the J6ers, I mean, literally from their families. And it's so sad to watch. And 2 years later, we've seen, you know, a lot of people exposed for doing shady things and trying to capitalize from politicians down the line, you know, writing books or whatever. I don't care. You know, these people are trying to capitalize off of others' misfortune. And it's really sad to see because they need it now more than they've ever needed or will need it. And it's going to follow them and their family for generations because nobody will do anything about it. And that's the politicians and the honesty from the media or the honesty from the FBI or other agents that could, you know, step forward and help us with this. So that's really, I think, the reason we exist right now is to help these, you know, defendants and their families and really the support network. We're trying to help coordinate, and we're working on a new intake form, basically, that helps direct these people to the different groups. So I'm connected with, you know, all the different support network groups that are out there, from, you know, Patriot Relief to Patriot Mail Project and Condemned USA. We've got, you know, partners now that have all found basically a lane, and it helps us to overlap. And, you know, now that there's a little visitation, we've got one group that helps fund some of the travel. We've got one group that's helping with the housing. We've got another one that helps with emergency situations. We've got another one that helps with, you know, legal situations, more on the law side of it for that. So, you know, investigations, we fall in the middle there and kind of do both because it's a coordination thing. And that's what's so, tragic. Is when you sit where I sit, you see the amount of devastation. If you just worked with the people in your state, you may know about 6 or 8 or 10 people that were in your state that are affected. But when you sit at the hub and you see that, you know, there's close to 1,000 people, and we probably don't know about, you know, a couple of hundred of them total because they're in the system in a different way. I hear court cases all the time that squeeze through or slide through, we never knew about. I talked to a man this week and he said, David, I am so sad because I'm looking at 18 months in jail and I never knew about any of these groups until just a few days ago. And I believe that if I had known that y'all were doing these things, doing this research, doing this investigation, that it could have made a difference in my case. Now he's going to jail for 18 months because the networks, nobody's talking about it. Nobody's connecting the dots. Nobody's, you know, stepping up to help these people in a big, big way. And we've been begging the big names and the big voices and the big media. And don't think for a minute that the big media sources don't have every bit of information that I do, because I give it to them, and the politicians and, everybody that's bigger than me, which is pretty much everybody. But, you know, it's amazing how much work that, my team and myself have done on January 6th. The Ray Epps conspiracy theory started with us. We blew that story out to get attention on that situation, and it never went away. The deaths, the murders, the witnesses, you know, the information about so many different parts of each individual story for, you know, we probably worked on 50 different, you know, cases trying to get video evidence and track people through the Capitol and show that they didn't, you know, do the crimes. Mostly it's a matter of disproving mm-hmm. what the narrative from the government is. And it's, I mean, it's hours. It takes a long time, but it's worth when you get that video put together and you send it to the lawyer and you say, here is, you know, just everything that has to do with your client or whatnot. It's rewarding in that respect, but yeah, we just need more help. We just need more support to do more and to stay in the game at this point, because 2 years in, it's exhausting, very exhausting.
I hear you. And unfortunately, we are at the end of our program for today, but I really hope you come back, either if I'm still sitting in for Dr. Jim Glazov or whenever he's back. We would love to continue helping you spread the message and help you in any shape or form we can. So hopefully we get to have you back.
Well, thank you so much. It's really good to meet you, and I want to know more about your story as well. It's intriguing, and the overlap. You know, I don't think people understand how different it is, and for it to still be the same. It's the same blueprint, same games that we've been playing on people around the world. We're just playing them on ourselves now, our three-letter agencies. And, you know, like I said, I appreciate you having us on here and for all the support from your audience as well.
Of course. And am I correct that everybody will go to stophate.com and everything's there for them? Buy the book, send the letter, sign up to get in the list for the letter, send donations in any shape or form. Stophate.com is where they go to, right?
That is it. That is it. I appreciate you so much.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you, David, for everything that you do. And to our lovely audience, thank you for staying with me until now. Remember, these are important days. One day soon, you're going to have to answer to the question of, did you do your part? And I pray that your answer is yes, because this nation, oh, trust me, you all know my feelings about America. She's very well worth fighting for. So stand up, get up, go to your computers, stophate.com. After you finish that up, check out jamieglazov.com.